Welcome to another edition of the Puro Pinche Primos.
Hola, primo, primas. We are back. We are the Puro Pinche Primos. I'm your primo, Luis Velasquez. That's your primo, Christopher Costello. Primo, what is going on?
Summertime. I'm ready. I said this last time too. As summer gets going, man, it feels more and more like I'm becoming more and more relaxed, and that's definitely my job and actually getting there. But I still got a little ways to go. But sports and weather and food and
you're in San Antonio right now, so you are melting over there.
I am. Yeah, it's. It makes me think of someone that once came to visit me in San Antonio when I was very young, back in like college, and it was someone that I was dating, and they came and were right around the car, and they were like, "Yo, where's all the people?" And I remember like just turning, and I was like, "It's 105 degrees outside. There are no people outside. Like, ain't nobody coming out here." And she was like, "Oh, yeah, you're right."
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, "Roll that window down, feel it for yourself." And she was like, "Oh shit."
Yeah, every time I'm thinking about going back to San Antonio, man, I just think about through the pros and cons, and that heat is definitely a big con. It's a big con for me of going back. I don't know how we did it. I don't know, like we were talking earlier, like we did it, you know, when we were young, and you know, we didn't have lots of money, so AC was not, you know, not something we just had regularly, you know?
Yeah. We also were not like, so anybody that knows kind of this part of the country in the South is like, you good if you've got central air in your house. Yeah. And we never had central air, right? Like it was window units. Hope those are big window units. You were lucky if it was a big window unit.
Leave all the doors open. Have the fans strategically placed. Put some ice. Yeah. Put some a plate of ice in front of the fans.
you were not going outside at certain times of the day. I had to go out to play basketball this morning. I was like, I'm not being out there after 9 a.m. It was too hot at 9 a.m.
I feel you. Or like haven't been in the car, and you know, definitely they had no AC in that car, and just roll the window down, having that hot air hit you.
Yeah. You remember, like, having hoopties that, like, the window wouldn't roll down?
Yes, yes.
So you'd have, like, that one window, and then, like, if you really had bad luck, and we both probably did in those things as far as cars, it would be, like, the driver side door. And so that was even before we were driving. Yes. But, like, if you were going to go through, like, we go through drive-thru, and our moms had to open the door to pass money to the person.
Or those fucking metal-ass fucking seat belts. Sit on this fucking metal ass fucking brand.
You weren't wearing seatbelts in the summer because you weren't letting that thing touch you.
Yeah,
on the chest
like that. Put a towel over that shit.
Yeah. So if you've never been broke and you're listening to this show, like those are the things you get to look forward to if you ever go broke.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So anyways, we're talking about the heat and we're talking about the summer. One thing that's definitely hot is Caitlin Clark. We talk about her a lot here on this podcast. And then when we talk about summer Olympics are coming up. We just found out today that Caitlin Clark will not be on this year's summer Olympic teams. Are you surprised by that?
I definitely am surprised. I think that when you look at women's basketball as a whole, and particularly not just because she's popular, she's good. Like, she's WNBA ready. So let's not act like she like is not legitimately a candidate to be on that roster. I think that they're doing a disservice to the game, to the league, and probably to Team USA to not have her be on that team. The group that's already on this Olympic team is a loaded squad, though.
What I'm saying. I don't know if I totally agree with that. I think that, first off, she's going to have plenty of Olympics to be part of. And she'll definitely, to me, will be ready for the next Olympics. But as I look at this roster, like, who are you going to take off? Right. They got, of course, you got the bigs. You got Asia Wilson. You got Brittany Griner. You got Breonna Stewart. You got Alyssa Thomas. So when you look at guards, you're not going to take Sabrina off. You're not going to take Kelsey off.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that I could kind of think of was Kalia Cooper from the Phoenix Mercury. So I went up and looked at her stats right now. And she's balling right now. Like, she's averaging 23.5 points per game, 2 assists per game. You can't take her off. Compared to Caitlin Clark's, what does she have right now? 16 points a game, which is great. She's doing great as a rookie, I think.
Yeah.
But,
I mean,
I think if you put her on there, I think you'll be doing a disservice to her. Because you would be putting her on there purely for her name, I think.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is the thing though, right? Like, so we talk about, like, this team is going to be incredible. This women's team is going to the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
And you think about how loaded American basketball teams are going to the Olympics, and Caitlin Clark wouldn't, not like Caitlin Clark needs to be a starter on this team.
Yeah.
But you're telling me that she's not the, like, 12th to 15th best player you can put on the assembly of this team?
I don't
think so. Like, she's at the bottom end of the bench?
Yeah, I don't know. Man. Like, you're talking about the 12th. She's not the 12th best in the WNBA right now. Like, she's just that, she hasn't. She's going to be I don't want to say this as being like talking crap about her.
She strikes me like the Christian Laettner of this squad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, she's the future.
Yeah, she's the future. And but they don't have any, like, there are no rookies on this team, right? There are no the rookies. Amazing. They have the 3-on-3 women's basketball team, and that 3-on-3 squad is stacked with Haley Van Lith and Cameron Brink are the ones highlighting that one. So that is crazy that she hasn't played 3-on-3.
But that's the thing, Van Lith over her?
No, but like these girls on the 3-on-3 tournament or the 3-on-3 squad have been playing for Team USA 3-on-3 for two years.
The unit together.
Yeah, they've been playing it for years.
I just think of this like a potentially starting roster for Team USA women's basketball.
Yeah.
Diana Taurasi.
Yes.
Who's going to her, I don't know how this is even possible. She's going to her 6th Olympics.
She's old as shit. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, clearly. But she's going to her 6th. Like, I can't think of anyone who's gone to the Olympics, right? That many times. And it's still balling. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
She was lighting it up the other night in a way that I was like, Jesus, like,
yeah.
She's undeniably one of the GOATs, right? But Diana Taurasi.
Yeah.
With Asia Wilson.
Yeah.
Breonna Stewart.
Yeah.
Sabrina Ionescu.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'm saying that right. And then because you just need somebody huge, like Brittany Griner is going to be on the team this
right.
year. Like, those five alone are so insanely talented and scary that I don't know, like, who stands a chance against these women. But,
yeah,
again, this is what it's like. She could be at the bottom of that.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think it would have been a cool thing to have her on there. But if we're going by merit, like, she's not quite there yet.
Yeah.
And which is okay. So, like, it's all right. It's cool.
One thing I wanted to bring up to you,
yeah.
because you love her so much, yeah. I'm already moving on from Team USA, is Angel Reese the Draymond Green of the WNBA?
Yeah. But
we didn't prep for this.
We did not prep for that. No. Yes.
So that's actually a catch you by surprise question. Is she the Draymond Green? And does that mean that you're rooting for the Draymond Green of the WNBA? Like, that's your favorite player? Because that kind of sounds like you. I'm a little grossed out right now.
Okay, well, for one, she's not my favorite player, okay? for the WNBA. Okay, but
who's your favorite
WNBA? It's probably. I mean, Asia Wilson is just
a
beast. Like she's I mean, being an Aces fan, like she's it's got to be Asia Wilson. And she's what? She's been scoring 30s the last four or five games.
Yeah,
like she's on a mission this year.
Balling, yeah.
Yeah, she's on a mission. But yeah, I can say that. But she actually scores, right? So
who? Angel Reese?
Yeah, Angel Reese actually scores the basket.
I mean, once upon a time, Draymond used to score as well.
Yeah. But yeah, I can call it that. Like, she's a little dirty. She's a little, you know, she goes down there and she makes, you know, she lives in that paint. Crazy. I think she leads the league in offensive rebounding, right? And just rookies. Like, she leads the league in offensive rebounding.
She gets a lot of offensive boards.
Yeah. And so she's out there fighting. And she's not that tall. Like, compared to, you would think that Angel Reese, compared to, you know, the way that she rebounds, she's almost like Dennis Rodman that can score the way that she rebounds. I think she's like fifth or sixth in total in the league in rebounds and first in offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
She's
a beast.
Yeah, she's a beast. She's a grinder. She's like, she's in there. Yeah, I'm okay. I'm all right. You can call me a Angel Reese head. All right. With all that being said, I want to talk real quick before we get into, obviously, the NBA Finals. Earlier this week, there was a little spat between Stephen A. Smith and Monica McNutt, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of talking about this Caitlin Clark business and just how this, like, everybody is talking like the WNBA, and I think we talked about this either an episode ago or two episodes ago, of like this, what is the word I'm looking for? This talk that the WNBA women are picking on Caitlin Clark. Mm-hmm. And of course, Stephen A was like, you know, these girls need to stop it. This is their golden goose. This is their, you know, they should be more respectful. And Monica McNutt, it was like not having that, you know. And to me, like, she shut him down on First Take. So, what was your thought about that and on that whole? Because it was like the number one story in sports, like for first 2 days.
It was a heated moment.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Shout out to Monica McNutt though, because
I respect her because she's like, she doesn't pull punches. She's like a, she's a really good analyst, and she also just says it how it is, right? Like you can tell she's not like playing politics in any way or trying to like protect people's feelings. She's not also never really like disrespectful either or rude. My only thing with it, I was all for it except for like it. It seemed like she was kind of going there where like it was almost like a, like kind of a laughing thing, like trying to make light of him, being like calling him out. And like, I think she could have done it more gently. And my thing to you is that like, she could have done it more gently because she's on the show. And I mentioned to you before, is like, you can call out, but you can't really call them out in their own house. And that's Stephen A's house, right?
Yeah.
So like to do it there, clearly like taken fully by surprise. And I think in the moment you can see him feel like disrespected.
You're more gangster if you do it in somebody's house. I would say that. You're more gangster if you do it in somebody's house.
Yeah, but also is like, is that really what you want to do if you're Monica McNutt? Like, does that benefit her in any way? Or does it benefit anything? But also, you know, in that argument, I think, like, is Stephen A, and that's my question back to you, is Stephen A right in his rebuttal later on where he's like, yo, like, you know, you only know these women because of the fact that, like, I'm giving them the platform. Like, do these women have greater platforms? I'm not saying that he's right in saying it that way, but is he accurate in that, like, he's given more opportunities for WNBA players to have a platform on the show than in other shows? And I'm not saying it makes it right. I'm just saying, is that actually true?
Yeah.
Because I actually don't know. I know that you watch way more of those shows than I do.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and, like, I stopped being a Stephen A. Smith fan for a while. And, like, and so First Take to me is just kind of, it shouldn't even be called the First Take anymore. It's just like the Stephen A. Smith Show. And I don't know. To me, I'm not gonna like I watch all the episodes, but when he said that, I was like, I don't know if that's true or not. Like,
yeah,
like he maybe he's talked about it a little bit, but like, I mean, she said it right. She called him out. Look, with your platform, you could have started this years and years ago, right?
Yeah,
you could have been, you know. But he's not. First Take doesn't do that. What they do is see what's trending at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's what they talk about. So if WNBA is trending, then he'll talk about it. But I mean, he's not going to put it on his platform.
Yeah, let me also say, though, like, Stephen A's not in charge of what ESPN is going to broadcast, right? Mm-hmm. And so if they're now broadcasting games in a way they weren't before, now you have the opportunity to talk about it because it's like actually on TV where it wasn't before. And I think Monica McNutt's point was like, yo, if you would have done this, there probably would have been more.
Yeah. That was push, like, if you would have talked about it more, then ESPN would have been like, hey, maybe there's some, maybe we should broadcast this more. That's what I'm saying. Like, see, to me, the First Take, just talked about what's trending instead of trying to make things trendy, if that makes sense, right?
So
it's just, to me, all in all, when I think about it, like, I'm just tired. I'm tired of these shows. I'm tired of this First Take. I'm tired of what's whatever Skip is doing over there in Fox, like.
And that's ultimately what I think even was trying to. He's become this like character entertainer, like Jerry Springer sports guy.
Yeah.
Because when him and Skip split, they lost that like back and forth thing. And he tried to create that with Max Kellerman, and Max Kellerman isn't that type of dude.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to feed into that. And you could tell Max Kellerman tried at certain points. It's just not who he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we see now. The what like arguing with Skip Bayless did for Shannon Sharpe's career,
yeah,
right, and who he is now, and like the interviews that he's getting and the notoriety and the money he's getting from being a guy that actually like argued and legitimately like disliked Skip Bayless. But I think you talked about this, is that this is just like a threat to sports journalism,
yeah. And even when you bring up Shannon Sharpe, right, like it's just like he got big debating Skip, but well, like when Skip started being disrespectful to him, that's when people like started rallying behind Shannon Sharpe and like, you need to go. Like when he was talking about like you're jealous of Tom Brady and all this stuff, like he was starting to be disrespectful, and then Shannon Sharpe gets his own show where he starts interviewing people, and then like he blows up with fucking Cat Williams comes on, right? Yeah. And then people are questioning Shannon Sharpe, like, well, why you just letting people talk, right? And you're not questioning them, you're not doing, like.
Yeah.
And
he's not a journalist.
Yeah, that's his first thought. Well, I'm not a journalist. Like, you're doing journalistic things, right? Like, you.
Is he, though? He's like, he's kind of like a talk show host, right? Like, right. He's like, come on. It's your name. People like the same things that I do.
These are also these are also the same people, right? These players that do this stuff are also the same people that complain, hey, about these journalists. You never played the game. You've never done this, right? Why are you?
Yeah.
Why are you? You know, analyzing this. You want to be the same thing over here on the journalistic side, right? Oh, but I'm not a journalist. Like it's just a
bad players. Players who argue against the media to me are idiots because it's like, that's why you're a millionaire, right?
Yeah.
But also, I also get when a player is like, yo, how can you tell me like what I'm feeling or doing when you haven't been in the situation of it? And that part of journalism, I understand, right? Because that's not journalism. Like you're now just like criticizing and like trying to talk poorly about an athlete versus like reporting the facts. Like unless a player said that, then you're doing that. But ultimately, I think that with a Skip Bayless, like I hate Skip Bayless, by the way, like disgusting, right? And Stephen A, I think, is like now realized that there's more money in this, like the yelling version of him and the dramatic version of him, than there is the other way around. My other question to you before the show that we started recording was, is Stephen A. in that position of being at the top heap of being paid as a journalist who's like really an entertainer at this point?
Right.
And is he basically, does he have a target on his back from other analysts, journalists, but particularly players trying to like grow in their branding and as like a journalist and like doing podcasts and stuff to like insult him or get in disputes with him, right? It's like we talked about like rap battles. Like I compared him to like Drake. Like, is he at so much at the top that people will either be disrespectful or challenge him just for the sake of notoriety? Because that's what it kind of sounded like he was saying about Monica McNutt.
Yeah, I think so.
Right? You've never heard of her until now.
Yeah, yeah. He's trying to take credit. Apparently, like nobody, no female in ESPN has ever done anything until, you know, Stephen A. has put them on business. So he's, I think he took credit for Doris Burke. He took credit for, like, you know, so many women at ESPN. All right. Yeah, I think he's got a target on his back. But I think, honestly, I think to me that back and forth was more, like, there's some underlining stuff going on there. Right? That seemed more than just Caitlin Clark talk between those two.
Yeah, no, this is personal, or else I don't think we would have seen that rebuttal from Stephen.
Yeah, yeah, I think also, like, to me, Stephen A., he's about to leave. To me, I think he's about to leave ESPN. I know it's well publicized, like his contract ends in like a year. Yeah. And so he's auditioning to be on Fox, right? Not Fox Sports. He's going to be in Fox. He's been in so many shows over there in Fox. He's tiptoed on politics on that end, you know, of your Fox end, talking about Donald Trump, talking about, you know, African-American.
Yeah, he don't want to do that. He don't want that.
I think he does. That's what he wants.
I don't think he's made for that.
Yeah, he's talked about wanting to get into the political side of this stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he'll... I mean, hopefully he is ready for that. I hope that he doesn't make a fool of himself, but
he's all, I don't to know. Me, he already has so many times going on those Fox shows. He was on Tucker Carlson. He was on the Five they got over there. And he's on his way over there. And I'm done. I'm just done with Stephen A. He can go by. Like, it's. But I mean, to me, the larger picture is like ESPN is no longer looking for journalists. They've gotten like so far away from actual journalism. They've got rid of, you know, the sports reporter show. They've gotten rid of what was the other show that we had talked about?
Behind the Lines.
Behind the Lines, right? Real like journalistic stuff. And they've kind of gone away from that. They're strictly entertainment. Which is fine for them. I mean, that's kind of where everybody's going to. But I wish there was some journalistic stuff, like where we can go for somebody who's going to ask the hard question, somebody that's, you know, is not going to like bow down to all these people because they want them on their show.
Yeah, I hear you. I think that we are in a different time frame, and like I mentioned to you before, I think we're in a point of like quick hit media information.
Yeah.
With younger generation being like, you know, have only existed with phones in their hands. And that is how they get news and information and keep it moving. And clicks, you have to be mature, right? Like, I remember the first time I learned that, like, there was a new age where, like, sports journalists who, like, let's say, travel to the finals had to turn in their column after the game. So they had to be writing while they were watching the game because they had to turn it around so quick. And how that, I was like, oh, that changes everything for these guys, right? It's a completely different world for them. But aside from that, I do want to talk, you talked about like bowing down, and I am shocked to have seen game one of these NBA finals and the ways in which Dallas just like did not stand a chance against Boston. I mean, we've talked about that's who Boston should be, right? Yeah. Blowing everybody out. We hadn't seen that. And I think what was your takeaways from that game?
Because I mean, there's one clear. Is Porzingis the freaking is he the MVP? Right, because he came out fresh. First off, he came out balling, dominant.
Block shots. Yeah, insane shots.
Yeah, he just came out. I mean, he just looked fresher than anybody else, obviously.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, you know, I think Dallas kind of looked tired. But also, like, to me, if we're rating the players on this team, like, Dallas may have the top two players in this game, mm-hmm. and that's iffy. I don't know if I'm going to put Tatum or Brown, like, but to me.
Let's say they are, though.
Yeah.
For arguments.
But after that, like, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, like, it's all Boston, yeah. right?
Yeah.
And so they're more team oriented.
And I think you saw that. If you looked at this, that Game 1 Finals box score, I believe there were 7 Boston Celtics in double figures in this game.
And Luka only had one assist.
Yeah, Luka had one assist, exactly, which is insane. I've never seen Kyrie Irving miss so many shots within 5 feet of the basket.
Yeah.
He missed, like, a really crazy amount of, like, lay-ins and floaters and things that, like, normally fall for him that did not go. He shot 6 of 19 from the field and 0 for 5 from 3.
Yeah.
Luka still finished with 30 and 12.
Right.
But you know that it's much better that he gets 12 assists than the 12 rebounds. Right? And so that one assist was, like, a glaring stat line. But Porzingis, to me, I think Jaylen Brown, to me, is the MVP. I think Jaylen Brown was everywhere. He was a blur in that game. He had those 2 steals at like, half court on Luka himself. He had some blocks that were pretty, like, sensational. And he was ended up being the leading scorer in that game. He finished with 22. But one of the main things of that you brought up with Porzingis, to me, I remember thinking, like, if Porzingis is fully healthy, which I did not expect him to be even this healthy that we saw, they could sweep Dallas.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I didn't think he was going to come back for the series. So I'm already thinking them without Porzingis. To see him play the way that he did is terrifying that's who the Boston Celtics are, because he was sharp. Like, those elbow jumpers he was knocking down, they were insane. Like, there was no way Dallas was going to stop that rhythm that he had going. He had that going from the beginning.
Yeah, man, they're just... I mean, to me, this is the first time all postseason that I was just really, really impressed with Boston. Like you said, we had Tatum with 16, Brown with 22, the fucking Primo Al Horford had 10, Derek White had 15, yeah. Drew Holiday was 12, Porzingis had 20, Sam Hauser had 8, and that you compare that to the Mavericks, who you have Luka doing everything he can to get 30. Mm-hmm. Then you had Kyrie, like you said, struggled. He only had 12. Like, who is their third guy? Is it PJ Washington? Is it is it supposed to be Tim Hardaway Jr.? Like,
yeah, it's supposed to be, but we know that's not what it's going to be. I think in looking at this,
it's probably PJ Washington. He's had a pretty decent postseason altogether.
But they also had, like, X Factor guys step up in each game.
Yeah.
And, like, somebody appears, right? Like, Gafford will show up in a game and do really well. Lively has played really well in certain games. Like, they have guys that piece things together, and they didn't really have that in this game. And I think it showed the disparity in what you just talked about with, like, the top players.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you think about the next 4 best players that are on the floor,
right.
You got to go Tatum, Brown, Porzingis, Derek White.
Derek White, yeah.
And then, like, I don't know that you still don't go with another Celtic, right?
Right.
I thought one of the things that was one of the more interesting things in regards to looking at the longevity of this series, Boston controlled the game from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
They're up 20 at the half. But by the middle of the third, Dallas goes on a run and cuts it to 8.
Yeah.
And then Boston goes on their own run and pushes it back to 20 by the end of the third, and then it was a wrap. Like, they never really got close again. To me, the fact that they cut it to 8 after having been dominated the whole game was a really interesting thing. It was like, wait, they cut it to 8 even with Kyrie playing terrible in this game. They might still have a chance.
Yeah, they right? do, and especially because the Celtics are known to be, you know, they're chokers, and that to me, that was indicative on just what we've seen kind of this whole year with the Celtics. And just not being, like, tough enough, strong enough to hold that kind of lead. and put the foot on the neck. Like, they're just not built like that. But also, to me, just when you look at this whole game and what we might have to look at through this whole series is on the Dallas team, Kyrie's the only one with finals experience, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody else is rookie.
It looked like it.
Yeah, yeah.
Did it look like it? He and played a horrible game.
Yeah, Jason Kidd, you know, he's also got some finals experience. But then you've got, like, Celtics. You got Tatum. You got Brown. You got Horford. Derek White. They've all – I think the only one out of the big Drew Holiday who did it with Milwaukee. Porzingis is really the only one out of their main people that get minutes that doesn't have any finals experience. So they've got all this kind of experience, which they're able to lean on and especially help their coach out who doesn't have any, Mazzulla. But it's interesting. Like, I don't think it's over. Like, a lot of people already, like, this series is over. I wouldn't say that.
One thing that came out was, I thought was an interesting stat, is that Dallas has lost game one of every series in this playoff run.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the first time in history that a team has done that.
And then we've seen how Boston reacts in game two, right? They've lost the first series. Exactly. Yeah, they've gotten killed in the second game. Yeah. So it's not over. I think it's going to be a lot of series. But I think
game two is really important for that point, though, that you just made.
Yeah.
Like, if Boston can come out and dominate again in a game two, I think that says a lot more, right? Yeah. Than if it's close, even if they win and it's close, then that's not good for them.
But again, it goes back to our last episode where we were talking about if it's a blowout, Celtics are going to win that, right? If they can come out, push the pace, what we said last episode. They come out, jump on the lead, and it has to be a big enough lead because we know that they're going to give up a run, right? Like you said, like they did in the third. So it's a big enough lead where they can withstand the run and then blow it out. But if it gets close, like, Dallas needs to just stay with them. They need to not let them go out right away. Put the pressure on them right away. Keep it close. And I think if they keep it close, then they can get a game or two. But, like, I don't know. I don't think it's over. I'm not going to count the Mavericks out, but the Celtics look freaking good, especially with Porzingis. We haven't seen the Celtics team with Porzingis on it in a while. You almost forget how that looked.
Yeah, I forgot how good he can be shooting the ball. Yeah. I think one main thing I saw was, like, just how many guards Boston has that they can throw at Luka. Because you can't really defend Kyrie. Like, you kind of have to help defense on Kyrie and kind of contain him in his spot. But Luka, like, the one main thing was that they were guarding him before half court, and that was slowing him down in being able to facilitate or get what he wanted, or get even a good look of the floor and the spacing. Like, they got so many steals in the half court, like near half court, that it was like, it looked like sloppy basketball on Dallas's end, and particularly from Luka. They just, like, they were not swarming him, but they were more so like throwing different people, platooning at him, that I thought was really interesting, because Boston's got enough of those guys to do that. And I don't know that is something that he'll be able to, like, recover from if they don't make adjustments to get the ball out of his hand and have somebody else facilitate the offense when needed.
Yeah, yeah. I'm interested, really. I think what I'm very, like, I want to see what the adjustments are going to be. What is Jason Kidd not known for, you know, in-series adjustments, especially in-game adjustments. I think that's one of the big knocks on him. So hopefully, like, he can come up with something to counteract what Porzingis is now bringing. And I don't know. Again, we're talking about Tatum. Tatum didn't really have a great game.
Exactly.
I don't think he's
worried Dallas too.
Yeah, yeah. But I think to me they also worried. Like, he's not. To me, I think it's official now. Brown is the number one on this team. Right, it is not. Throughout this season, throughout this series, like, it's not Tatum. It is not Tatum. Let's transition here. Now we're talking about number ones and who's leading the way. Let's get into a little baseball here, Primo. One of the big stories that came out this week is that the MLB is now recognizing the Negro League stats into their stat book. So We all know that this country is a racist-ass country. And so a long time ago, African-Americans are not allowed to play in the MLB. So the Negro League was established. They had their own. They had Jackie Robinson was there. So many other great players were out there playing. But now their stats are included into the MLB stats, which is making a lot of racist people really mad. And so what are your thoughts about what his baseball decided to do? Was it the right thing? Was should it have kept it the way it was?
I'm going to start from just like a hype marketing standpoint. If you have never seen the logos for the Negro Leagues, they've got some of the best logos you're going to come across and are probably better than a lot of major baseball logos. But aside from that, I think it's, one, it's long overdue. I think that to not include it as part of baseball history is actually just bad for baseball, right? Like as a whole and the brand and like Major League Baseball is like, and I get probably wise because then they have to confront the fact that they have ignored it for so long. But you have some of these like incredible athletes that you can now, one, put into the history books, two, publicize as part of baseball history. But I think it's also one of those like really dark spots in sports that it will then have to force kids to recognize the severity of racism across the country. And particularly when we talk about how sports can kind of break those lines that like that adults in the world and in this country had created defining lines, even in sports, to not let just like people literally play together and against one another, right? But this Negro League stat is like, as far as like news and importance of the league, I think it's incredible, but it's also something where they have to do something to go back to publicize like those players. It's not enough just to like incorporate, like now you need to like go out and be like, yo, these guys were incredible baseball players and are important to like American history, society, and American baseball. What was your take on it as far as what you think it means?
I mean, as far as I think, like it's better late than never. You know, I think it's baseball just trying to save itself from itself. As it continues to, you know, just be, you know, at one time, baseball was thought to be the number one sport in America, as America's pastime, quote unquote. As it, you know, it's behind football, obviously. It's behind basketball, obviously. I'm not even sure it's third. I think there's a lot more hockey fans out here than there is baseball fans. When you look at the attendance on some of these teams, like you literally have hundreds of fans out here at these games. So, but one thing that like I'm interested of taking more of a deep dive of like where does it who stats get pushed down, who gets up? Like I see, I'm looking here. Josh Gibson is now the MLB's all-time career leader in batting average, right? Just by putting him in. He goes to the number one spot. So Josh Gibson batting average was .372 and he passed up Ty Cobb's who's at .367. Right? So that's gotta make some people mad. I'm sure people in Ty Cobb's family are upset about that, but it is what it is. Like you hear stories about like the most talent was in the Negro League. So if you know, if Gibson's out there batting .372 as his lifetime batting average, like it should count. It should count as one of the top. So, yeah, Bob Gibson is now the lead MLB record for batting average, which is awesome. And now also like there is some question. I don't know if you've heard this before, but this came up in a couple things that I saw that Babe Ruth was actually black, that he was like just a light-skinned black dude, and so like that's something that's popped up out of nowhere. of like, I've never heard that before, but within the week or two, I've seen a whole bunch of stories, and a whole bunch of conspiracy theories that Babe Ruth was actually black, but he pretended to be white so that he can play in Major League Baseball. Did you hear anything like that?
I've heard that before. I've never really like investigated that or to see. He was born in Baltimore, which is just to say, just there's a lot of black people in Baltimore. But you know, at this point, I think that's now the problem that they have to face, right? Which is probably what they didn't want, and now like had no choice because of social pressures. Is now you have to like align up stats that were already divided and talent pools didn't play against each other, right? Which now becomes problematic when you're now going to compare people. And that's what we do in sports, right? We compare other individuals to one another. And now we're going to run into this issue of whether or not, like what's valid and what's not. And I'm sure that the argument, if I was some sort of like racist and does not want these stats aligned, is like, well, there was fewer players in the Negro Leagues, or there, right? Like just looking at numbers wise. But either way, I think this is an important part of history. I think it's important that we have this, and that we're now in a position where we can like honor the legacy of a lot of players that didn't get love for now at this point would be like almost 100 years.
Yeah, yeah. So also, let's move on to another big time. Yeah, we're going to talk baseball here. We are talking baseball. Another big time story that came out this week is that the Primo himself, Major League Baseball has permanently banned Tucapita Marzano after determining that the infielder plays hundreds of bets on baseball games, including wagers on games involving the Pittsburgh Pirates where he was on. Marzano plays 387 baseball bets, totaling more than $150,000 in October of 2022. From July through November with a legal sports book, he became the first active player in a century to be banned for life because of gambling. So we've seen this already in football. We saw him and Pete Rose, exactly. So we saw it. We saw it in football, right? I think that was the first time somebody got suspended for a year.
Yeah,
and now we saw
Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, Calvin Ridley. Who's now Tennessee Titans? Shout out to them. But then we saw earlier this year, in the NBA. And now we have it here in baseball. What do you think about all this sports betting? These players getting caught?
Yeah, so leagues need to have, and teams, organizations need to have full on like training and professional development around players knowing what the rules are and to not be stupid enough to, and also to just warn them, like, if you get caught, we're not helping you. Right? That's number one. Two, I believe in this particular story, I think in the games that he bet on his own team, there were games where he was not playing, which probably made him think, I'll get away with this. I don't understand how you can make so much money playing a game that then you would decide to risk it all by betting on that same sport. Like, just go bet on something else. Bet on football. Also, what it made me think about was that some of these athletes probably have no clue about any other sport but their own. And so they bet on the thing they feel they know really well and then bet on these games. But to me, it's just like you're messing with your own money. And to mess with your own money, you got to be pretty dumb already, right? Or like you just got to be someone who makes bad
decisions. They're not even making like that much money on these bets, right? Some of these bets are like
baseball. He won 4.3% of the bets he made.
Yeah, he sucked at it. He sucked so bad at it.
Well, and that's the thing. It's usually those guys, right?
Yeah.
Porter, who got caught and banned from the NBA this year, right?
Yeah.
Just came out yesterday that his lawyer was stating that he's now in treatment for gambling addiction. Now, we know that also could be like a ploy for getting either less time or less of a punishment, that he's going through some rehabilitation program. But it also makes me think that, yeah, like if you are willing to risk your millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars for a couple of hundreds of dollars in a bet.
Yeah, just let it go, man. It just doesn't make sense. I can understand it, and I do think that you should treat it as an addiction. So many people do have an addiction to this. And so hopefully he gets the help that he needs.
So one really interesting thing about gambling addiction that I remember hearing was like, it's the most dangerous. And I remember thinking like, how is it the most dangerous? I immediately thought of drugs. Yeah. And they were like, it's the most dangerous because it doesn't require you to consume anything.
Yeah.
It's not like a food addiction, a drug addiction, alcohol addiction. It's just like, it's psychological in you making a decision poorly on a regular basis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, it's like, I mean, all addictions are in your mind, but some are aided by external factors, right? And this is not an external factor.
Yeah, yeah. It's just stop betting. Like, and I would say this. Shout out to the leagues who are catching these, because obviously whatever things that they have in place are working. For being able to catch these people who are betting on their stuff. And like you said, they need to do training. I do believe that they do training, right? I think all these leagues do.
Yeah, no, they must.
Yeah,
they
can't before be that the season starts, foolish. they make sure that these players know like the rules and what they can do and cannot do. And so, yeah, it is tough, especially now that, you know, gambling is just so natural now, like drinking water, right? Like, it's so. Yeah.
I was waiting because I wanted to bring this up earlier when you brought up the threat to like sports journalism and it being just like about debate. Sports betting is also a major threat to sports gambling right now. Like, you see odds and wagers and commercials, and even in their programming, ESPN is encouraging sports betting throughout. Yeah. They give you they'll have full shows on like gambling lines for games, right? And who to gamble, and they give you like your it's like a casino essentially. It's like their little casino version. And so how much that is a threat to sports gambling is really huge too.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's just natural now. You never used to see commentators make, you know, talk about the money line, talk about, you know, what's the over under and stuff. And now you're watching a game and the the NBA commentator is talking about, you know, what the over-under is for assists, what the over-under, and it's just weird. It's reality now. So, you know, you just need to know if you're in these sports, right? Like, just don't risk it, man. Like, what are you doing? Like, why are you risking it? Just stop.
It's a really poor decision, and usually, like, I remember seeing this one thing recently as a show. It's like documentary thing, but they were talking about like, what do you need in order to do well, like in a casino? And then they were like, you need someone that you trust to be with you at all times.
Yeah.
They were like, cause that needs to be the person that can tell you when to stop and just like cut it and move on and like walk away from the tables. And that same person also needs to know when to tell you to stop when you're winning, so that you don't lose big later on. Right. And you say like, that's enough. Like you're on a roll and like, here's enough. Like, you hit your mark. Let's get out of here.
And also, you just need to have an interpreter so you can blame it all on him when you get caught.
Exactly. Right. You got to have a fall guy. One thing, big things about Major League Baseball, I know we got to wrap up the show, is right now, the best team in baseball, and I'm glad that I don't have to say the other team, but best team in baseball right now, over 700 win percentage, is the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah. Yeah.
45-19. And then right behind them is the New York Yankees at 45-20, which I, you know how much I hate to say, but the Yankees are on a tear right now. Soto just injured his forearm. They said it looks likely to be back very soon. So there was good news, but that he's trying a lot of treatments. They need him because him alone.
To me,
him paired up with Judge are going, they're like at a historical rate right now. We're going to see something really special. And for me, it's like, I'm willing to see that in baseball. Like, I want to see some, like, really powerful, like, individuals carry teams in that way and, like, hit bombs.
Yeah, to me, Soto right now would be MVP of just the way that he's just out there just killing it. And I had hoped that they were going to get the Padre version of Soto.
Yeah, exactly. But, I know we had talked about
that. Yeah, we had talked about Al Hope, but no.
He's raised his
this
level.
This isn't even the national Soto, right? This is...
No, this is the best version we've
ever... Yeah, this is the potential that we saw from the national Soto that we thought he was going to be. And he just... And I don't know, the Yankees already talking about, like, they're not into spending a whole bunch of money. If they're going to re-sign this dude, they're going to have to break the bank. Because somebody's going to break
They will. Yeah. They will.
Yeah.
And I think particularly if they stay healthy, one thing that I'm, like, really scared of with this Yankee team is they haven't even gotten Gerrit Cole back. They're about to get him.
Oh, I know.
And that, just think about like just the additional wins that are going
to
come
in. And that's what, to me, it always comes down with the Yankees is their pitching. And so if their hitting is always going to be there, but can their pitching, you know, just keep them in games? And so far, so good. Like they're rocking it. But anyways, as we wrap up this show, Primo, let's talk about, we have started it last week. I really loved it. We're gonna have a top five, right?
Yeah.
And going in, we started off the show talking about how the summer and hitting it. To me, I brought up this top five, and I wanted a top five things that remind you of summer, right? Top five things that just kind of starts the summer out for you. This is what summer is about. So as we get started,
I told you. I'm going to stick to sports strictly because there's things about summer that I love that I don't want to mention on this show because then it becomes too personal. But yeah, I'm excited for summer. There's like, I definitely got my like top five.
Yeah, I've got some old, I got some outside looking in top five summer dresses. You know,
is that your number five?
That's got to be my number five. Summer dresses is number five to me. Shout out to the ladies that wear them, that bring them out. They've always been a thing for me. I love summer dresses. You women, you look beautiful in them. Just keep rocking. So that summer dress is my number five.
Okay. Ridiculous. I'm going to go with the NBA Finals.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I'm going to make you the creep of the show. No, I'm joking. We were joking about that before, and I was like, I don't want to mention that I like beaches and bikinis and being out like in the summertime. But I think summertime just brings up like so many like feelings of like relaxation and joy. But for me, the start of the summer is the NBA Finals. Once the NBA Finals get started, that is the start of summer for me, right? That's usually the first week of June. So to me, like the NBA Finals are the marker to be like, oh, summer's officially here because the finals have started. So for me, like Thursday night, game one, that was like the start of summer for me. So NBA Finals and so many memories of NBA Finals, obviously as Spurs fans. But I think the summer that I always think about was that summer that we mentioned, I think, in the last episode, which was that O.J. Simpson, Houston Rockets, New York Knicks, Game 7, NBA Finals, seven-game series in 1994. Because that series was right in the middle of, like, blasting hot summer. And I remember just, like, it being this, like, sign of, like, being in the house all day, waiting nighttime for the game, getting hyped for the game. And it just being like, man, so the NBA Finals are my number five. What's your number four?
Okay, my number four, we had just talked about it. We had gotten into baseball. But to me, baseball never really started for me until after the All-Star game in July. And so the baseball All-Star game is the big time summer event for me. Not only that, but it takes back to our childhood. Your mom took us to the All-Star game weekend. In Dallas, we went to Fiesta Texas, I think, out there, or what was it called? Yeah, I think not Fiesta Texas.
Six Flags.
We went to Six Flags up there. We saw the Home Run Derby. We saw Aubrey Bell.
Frank Thomas.
Like that. Yeah. So to me, and that honestly, that is the first game usually every year that I watch that isn't revolved around the Astros. Right, usually I can put that on. Look forward to the Home Run Derby, and then watch that. To me, the baseball All-Star game is just real summer to me.
Yeah, Yeah, that's funny. I thought of baseball, too, as my number four, but not Major League Baseball. It was two things. One is the college baseball championship. It got me to recognize schools that I had never heard of and that I had no idea, like Cal State Fullerton when we were kids. They had, like, a very powerful baseball program. Vanderbilt usually has, like, a really strong program. I remember Long Beach State. And being like, wait, Long Beach, the only time I've ever heard that is from Snoop Dogg. But Long Beach, if you ever look back in the 90s, that LB logo, that black hat with the gold, that shit was a tough, talk about logos like I was mentioning in the, that could have been like a Negro League logo, the
yeah.
Long Beach State one.
Yeah, yeah, but, it was tough.
But my main one is the Little League World Series, man. The Little League World Series for me is like such a like summertime joy, like this is why you play sports thing. And yeah, yeah. And I love watching Team Japan. Those Japanese kids
always are there.
Play the game the way it's supposed to be played. Like, they're perfect. They do everything right. They're fundamentally sound. They're just incredible, incredible athletes. And I'm always rooting for Team Mexico. But those kids, like, they'll have, like, they'll do it up, and then they usually play, like, Team Japan, and then, like, get destroyed. But shout out to all those, like, Little League World Series athletes and players, and obviously on the U.S. side, we're always rooting for Texas teams. But Little League World Series, for me, it just, like, it pulls at my heartstrings in a different way.
Yeah, yeah, I see. I see. So that was your next one? That was your next one?
That was my number four, the college championship yeah, yeah. and Little League World Series.
Okay, so number three is going to be my first one that's not really revolved around sports. But it just takes me to my childhood. And every time I hear this sound in the neighborhood, kids get excited. I have yeah. like a little bit of PTSD about it. But the ice cream truck. The ice cream truck in the summer, it just hits different, right? It definitely yeah. rings summer. Yeah. You know summer is here when you hear the little hell jingle yeah. that the ice cream truck is hitting. We have one around here that comes on every Friday or Saturday. They always catch me off guard. But my kids hear it like dogs hear freaking noise, right? Their ears perked yeah. up. They're hitting that ice cream. And of course, like I said, the ice cream truck is a little different for me. Of course, my father had an ice cream truck when I was little. I had to work in that thing in this 110 degree heat,
yeah.
sitting next to the damn generator that was going off.
Yeah, those things don't have ACs, by the way. Yeah. Just so y'all know, yeah. ice cream trucks don't got ACs. At least not the ones down in South Texas.
Yeah, no, we used to be like, open that freezer up, man. Let's let this heat. Let's get in that yeah. dry ice.
My favorite memory of that truck, and I think I shared this a while back on this show, was thieving that ice cream truck. I told you that story where you ran inside for something, and I was like, yo, is this a setup? And I just remember grabbing everything that I ate, like, at least 3 to 4 ice creams in the, like, 30 seconds that you were in the house.
Yeah, shout out to my dad. I remember, yeah. like, the wrestling ice creams. Those are iconic wrestling ice creams.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan with your Andre the Giant was on there. Those things, the Ninja Turtle yeah, ice creams. Then my dad yeah. with the those are iconic. Ice cream those, truck. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. All right. So what you got? What you got? What they were at number two?
For this is my number three.
Yeah.
Is Wimbledon. and I got to give a shout out to you for that, because you're who got me into tennis. Like, I think it was probably out of just desperation and nothing else on TV in the summer.
Yeah.
But I remember you were like into it, and I was like, yeah, I'm not watching this shit. And then we had to watch it. And then being like, oh, this is actually really intense. And you get those Wimbledon matches where you get these like crazy returns back and forth, and like, you're hooked.
Yeah.
But Wimbledon to me is just like incredible. Like, the grass, by the time they get in the final, the grass is all like messed up, and like you got people slipping, and grass stains on the like skirts or on the shorts, and yeah. Wimbledon's just incredible.
Yeah, Wimbledon was my number two, actually. It was my number two. Wimbledon, it means something for two. I think, honestly, it has to do, you know, again, we reach back to our childhood. The Pete Sampras versus Andre Agassi, the Steffi yeah. Graf versus Monica Seles.
Yep.
Like, those rivalries.
Navratilova
was there, right? And so, yeah, those rivalries coming up were just a little bit different for us. And, yeah, definitely in the summer. And you had to fight. Like, summertime, to me, and maybe we'll hit this up on another top five, is just those big sports are out of the way. and and you find something, right, to watch that's competitive, and Wimbledon was just it for me for those for those 2 weeks. And it got me into tennis to where I played it in middle school, which is absolutely horrible.
Yeah, I remember that.
I was horrible.
Tennis is tough, man, and it's like one of those, like, it made me respect the conditioning of those athletes. You have to be in prime shape to be a tennis player.
And it's just you out there, right? Like, you can't be, like, it's just, it's all about you. All right, so what you got is your number two now. My number two
is, and obviously this doesn't happen often, but the World Cup, to me, is number two. I didn't appreciate this. There's two times I appreciated, like, the World Cup. And one was when I first really recognized what the World Cup was also 1994. And that, or is it 94 or 96? But it was when we were moving your sister Ana Luz into Texas A&M. And it was that summer, and the World Cup was on. And I remember being like in a McDonald's in College State, and then the final was on, or the semifinal. And I just remember being like, oh shit, this is big.
Yeah,
like,
this is important. Huge. Yeah. It's crazy that moment, that we both have that moment that you wouldn't think was a major one. But yeah, definitely. I remember that. For sure.
Yeah.
Going to my number one, it's another thing that doesn't happen often, but it happening this summer. It happens every 4 years. I have to go with the Summer Olympics. These Summer Olympics have to be the best thing going ever. For those 2 weeks, and then just like everything that winds up, right? You start off with swimming. Right, and then you get your team sports, like your basketball, your baseball, you know, your all that stuff, and then you end it with track and field. Like, it gets no better. You don't even have to think about who you're going to root for, right?
Yeah,
you can watch freaking jousting, you can watch fencing, right? You can watch badminton, and you're just like, okay, I'm going for USA. Where are we at? Here we go.
I tell you what, I'm watching that beach volleyball.
Yeah, that's
part of my summer plans.
Summer plans. Although they policed up those.
We don't got to talk about what I'm talking about. Just beach volleyball, right?
Just volleyball in general, though. Even the regular volleyball.
Indoor volleyball is tough. Like, that's scary.
Yeah, it is.
Those things coming at you, and I'm like, yo, I don't want to play that.
Sure.
Yeah, but yeah, Summer Olympics are it. And if you're not an Olympics fan, please, like, stop whatever you're doing this summer to at least watch the event that is, like, most interesting to you. I feel like the storylines of these athletes from across the world are just incredible.
Like, gymnastics, the only time we were watching gymnastics. Yeah. We were watching gymnastics like we are pros at it, right? Like, we're the 8.7. Ooh, she nailed that.
I remember judging all those.
And we only watched them. Yeah. Who was the little girl we had a crush on when we were little kids?
Dominique Moceanu.
Yes. She's still that small, too.
She still is that small. Yeah, I remember, like, she looked, like, so young, but we were such little kids. She was older than us, and being like, I love this. Like, I love her forever. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, for real. But, yeah, anyway, that's our top five things that remind us of summer. Get us ready for the summer. I hope you guys are having a good summer, or have a good summer. We look forward to talking to you guys again. We are the Puro Pinche Primos. We are out.